We're holding on for test number days, seven lines from the bottom. Continuing with halachas of writing Sifrei Torah, that's Tefillin Mezuzos. The Gemara says, Amar of Yosef, Hani Tauti Mili Amar Rav Sfari. There were the following two dinim that Rav said regarding the dinim of writing Sifrei Torah. And the Tanya Tiyukte, and each one of them we have a Braisa that schlugs him up, that says that it's not like what he says. Chodah, the first din is as follows. Chodah Amar Rav, Sefer Torah Yesh Beshtei Toyus Becholdaf Vadaf. Rav had said that if a Sefer Torah has two mistakes in every column, Yisakin, then that's fine. That Sefer Torah is not that Sefer Torah doesn't have to be put away forever. You can fix them. It's not so bad. Shalosh, but if you have three mistakes or more on every on every column you've gone is, then you have to put that Sefer Torah in Gniza and you can't repair it. Because, in other words, as the Gemara is going to explain the details of what kind of mistakes we're talking about, the point is the Sefer Torah is going to end up looking spotty when you correct the mistakes. It's not really going to look nice, and a Sefer Torah has to look nice. So that's one statement of Rav. However, but we learn a Braisa that shlugs him up. Because the Braisa says, Sholosh Yisak and Arba Yigonis. The Braisa says, no, it's not two and three. Two is good. Three, you have to put it in Gniza, like Rav says. But rather, the Braisa says, three is still okay. You can still fix it. Four, if it says four mistakes on each column, then already you would have to put it in Gniza. The Rashba brings a point, and here, you know, until now in our Masechta, we've been talking about Chidushim HaMiyachasim LaRashba, which are Chidushim that are printed under the Rashba's name, but there's reason to think that they're not from him. Here we're talking about his actual Shailas HaTshuvas. He says that actually even Yigonis doesn't mean the Sefer Torah is a goner forever. It just means that you have to repair it. So according to him, in other words, then what's the difference between Yisakin and Yigonis? So the Gemara is going to explain soon. We'll talk what kinds of misspellings we're talking about when you're able to just write something to fill in what's missing and not scrape anything away. Then the Braisa calls that Yisakin. But when you have to actually scrape away letters, then the Braisa is calling it Yigonis. Meaning, in other words, until you actually do, because there, that's not really part of the, he explains, in other words, the actual craft of the sofer involves writing. It doesn't in and of itself include erasing or scraping away. So when you have to do that, then we would call that yugonis, meaning, in other words, you can repair it, but it's not part of a sofer's normal repertoire of things to do. And therefore, and if he doesn't do it, then and until he does it, then you're gonna is. But according to him, you would in fact be able to repair it under those conditions. Not all Rishonim learn like that. In particular, the Rivosh argues with the Rashba on that and says that the fact is that as the Gemara is going to explain soon, we're talking about when there's a lot of letters missing, and then the only thing we're going to be able to do, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, is either put the missing letters in between the lines, above the line, like people do sometimes when they leave out something in writing and they have to put it in a little caret or something and they put it above the line, or it would mean you have to actually scrape away letters and rewrite them. And either way, the Rivosh argues it's still going to look menuma, it's still going to look spotted, and therefore that's a problem. In any case, so the point is that this Braisa contradicts Rav, because the Braisa is saying three on each page is still okay, you can still fix it. So the Gemara continues, Tono, now we learn in a Braisa, more details about that, Im Yesh by Daf Achas Shlema, if you have one complete column in this Sefer Torah that's full of mistakes, but you have one complete column that doesn't have mistakes, Matzelas HaKuloi, then it saves the whole rest of the Sefer Torah, and now it means that Sefer Torah is not a goner, we can now go and start repairing and fixing the misspellings in all the other places. By the way, as the Gemara is going to point out soon, we're talking about misspellings, chaseris and yiseris. There are other kinds of mistakes where, of necessity, you're really going to have to put away the whole, if not the whole Sefer Torah, at least the whole sheet, the whole yuria, on which the mistake is. For example, that Amman points out, if, let's say, for example, a person didn't write a psufa or where it's supposed to, or the sofer didn't write a psufa or a stumma where it was supposed to, or he put a psufa or a stumma where it doesn't belong, etc. There's really no easy way to fix that unless you're going to start erasing and rewriting a lot of letters, and that really wouldn't look good. So then at that point, you may have no choice but to put that yuria, to put that sheet in gniza, and then do a fresh one. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Mautim Shmei Derav. Now this applies when we say that if you have one column in there that's intact, that doesn't have mistakes, then it saves the whole rest of the sefer. That's only provided that most of the sefer is written properly. So once you have you have more than three mistakes on each daf, and if it weren't for this one intact one, you wouldn't be able to repair it at all. Or according to the Rashba, you'd be able to repair it, but it would involve a lot of scraping. But only if most of the sefer is written correctly. But if most of each page has mistakes, then even one complete page is not going to save the whole thing. So the Gemara continues. What about if that page itself, the same as one column that's intact, but what if it's not really completely intact? What if it has three mistakes in it, and all the other ones have four or more mistakes? My, then what's the din? Can we consider that one to be okay, and it's good enough to save the rest of the sefer from being put in gemiza or not? Listen, since three mistakes, as the Braisa is saying, you could fix. So now, what you do is you fix it. And now you have one complete daf, mitakin. So you fix that one, and now it'll save the rest of the sefer. Now, the Gemara points out, with all of this that we're talking about over here, Tosfos does point out that if you're going to say that every time you can repair one column and then from there you can save the whole sefer, then the whole din wouldn't really work. It means that to begin with, when you first examine the sefer Torah, you find that there's one column that has three or fewer mistakes and all the rest of them have four or more. But we can't say, for example, if all of them have, let's say, four mistakes, you can't say fix one column and now it's a complete column, now it's an intact column, and now it can save the rest of the Sefer Torah, because otherwise the whole din wouldn't begin, really. Again, according to the Rashba, even in that case, you could repair it. We're just calling it yugonis in the sense that it doesn't, what you're going to have to do to repair it is not part of the normal repertoire of what Sefer has to do. The Gemara points out the Hani Mili. All this that we're talking about, mistakes that may cause a Sefer Torah to have to be put in Gemiza, is only chaseves. Only if it has those places where letters are missing. Because then, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, then what do you do in order to put in those missing letters? You're going to have to suspend them between the lines. And then, after a while, with a Sefer Torah like that, with all over the place, you have letters suspended between the lines, it's not going to look good. It's not going to look nice. But if there are places where there are extra letters, let's say extra vavs or yuds or whatever, less than vav, then there's no problem. Go ahead and remove the extra letters, and it's not such a problem. Tosfos actually brings an opinion that says that some certain have made a mistake. They think when they're not sure. We know there's a lot of words in the Torah that are sometimes written molay and sometimes chosef. Sometimes they have a vav or a yud representing one of the vowels, and sometimes not. So sometimes Tosfos says a sofer is not sure how it should be in a certain place, and he writes it malaya based on our Gemara over here that we're saying that Yiseris is not a problem. Tosfos says that's wrong. What it means is, it doesn't mean that you can write the Yeseris and there's not a problem with it. What it means is, if you find the Yeseris in the Sefer Torah and you're scraping them away and then having to make the letters on each side of the Yeseris a little larger to fill up the space, then it's not so bad. That doesn't really look so manumer. That doesn't really look so spotted because it's only small areas that you have to scrape away and rewrite. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Yohanan does learn, similar to the Yesh Toyim of Tosfos, he says that what the Gemara means is if there are extra letters, then you really don't even need to read them at all. It won't make the Sefer Torah any less kosher. On the other hand, the Mordechai points out that it does, and that's the general halacha is, if we're learning the Torah and we find a mistake in it, we generally say as follows: if the mistake actually changes the meaning or the pronunciation of the word, then we have to take out another Sefer Torah. If it's just a matter of, for example, an extra or missing vav or yud, then we say actually we don't have to take out another Sefer Torah, not so much because the extra or missing letter won't hassle it, but because we really can't be sure. The Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that our Sefer Torah are 100% accurate, and there may have been, the Gemara mentions that we're not so bucky, we're not so expert to know which words are supposed to be choser and yeser. So then you wouldn't take out another statement. So let's say, for example, you have a word like la'avoy seichem, which sometimes is spelt with the vav after the zayis, and sometimes not. So if you find it written the wrong way in the Sefer Torah, you don't have to take out another one, but you do have to repair it when you can. So in short, then the din would be as follows: if you have a Sefer Torah that has three or more mistakes, that has four or more mistakes on each column, and there's not even one column that doesn't have less than four mistakes, and those mistakes are that there are misspellings where there are letters left out, then you can't fix that. Then, according to the Pashtus of the Gemara, you can't fix that Sefer Torah, because now where are you going to put those extra letters? You're going to have to squeeze them in between the lines, and then the Sefer Torah is going to look very unattractive. On the other hand, if you have extra letters in places and you just have to scrape them away and make the letters on each side of it a little thicker, then you can do that. And if it's less than that number of mistakes, then you can even put in the letters between the lines if necessary. Is how the Gemara is concluding it over here. And again, the Rashba understands in one of his Trubas that no, in all cases you could fix it. The difference is that in the case of missing letters, you're going to have to do a lot more scraping, because you're going to have to actually scrape several letters around each side, and hopefully there aren't Hashem's names involved over there, because of course you can't scrape those away. And then you're going to have to make the letters a little skinnier on each side of it in order to fit in the missing letters.
Can you repeat that slowly, Alexander?
So if you have a Sefer Torah, then what the Gemara is concluding over here is, if you have a Sefer Torah that has four or more mistakes in each column, and specifically the mistakes are where you have missing letters, so now you can't, so at least according to the simple surface meaning of the Gemara, you cannot repair that Sefer Torah, you have to put it in Geniza. Again, the Rashba learns a little differently, but if it has three or fewer mistakes on each daf, then you can repair it, even if it's in fact a missing letters, and it means you're going to have on each column, you're going to have three letters hanging between the lines, you would be allowed to do that, the Gemara is saying. And if the mistake, and then if you have one column that has three or fewer mistakes, then that one saves the rest of the Sefer Torah as well. So even if the rest of them have four or more, then we can still repair it. And if if the mistakes are letters that are extra rather than letters that are missing, then there's no problem. No matter how many of them you are, you scrape them away and you make the letters on each side a little thicker to fill up the space. And nowadays, I mean, I can't imagine that such a din would actually come up in practice, especially nowadays with computer checking of Sefer Torah. Then any Sefer Torah that had three or four, and a Sefer Torah that had one mistake, and it would be caught in fairly short order. But yeah, okay. Gemara says Edoch.
So do they check duff by duff before the whole Sefer Torah is bound together or not?
Where, do they do computer checking? As far as I know, they do it only. As far as I know, they do it only when the Sefer Torah is complete. But I don't know. I guess the Sofer himself checks over his work as he's doing it. But in case he misses something, human error, then they have afterwards computer checking it. Okay. Uh-huh. In any case, the point is, we said this is one din that Rav said, which is contradicted by Braisa. Now the Gemara says Idoch the Amar Rav. Now what's the second din that Rav said, which is also contradicted by a Braisa? He says, a cursive Sefer Torah, person's writing a Sefer Torah, uvol ligmer, and he's about to finish the Torah, goymer, then he finishes it wherever he's holding on the column, v'afilu be'emtza hadaf. Even if he's in the middle of the column, then fine, he'll finish right there and leave the rest of the column blank. But the Gemara says, Mesi, I have a contradiction against him, because a Braisa says differently. And then the Braisa says, a kosev Sefer Torah, person writes a Sefer, and this Braisa comes from Masechta Sofrim. The Gemara throughout the Sugya is going to be quoting things from Masechta Sofrim. You can find in a standard Shas, Masechta Sofrim is one of the Masechta's Katanas. They're not actually part of Shas, but they're kind of like an adjunct to it. In standard Shas, and they're usually printed at the end of Seder Nizikin, after Ovis and Horius, and then Adius, Ovis, Horius, those Masechtas is usually where the Masechtas Tanis are printed. When they come from is not so certain. It seems that the final assembly of this, some of them are referenced here and there in the Gemara. It seems the final assembly of them may have been in the time of the Rabbanan Sivaroi, or the early Goinim, in the period shortly after the Gemara was completed. In any case, Masechta Sofrim deals a lot with the dinim of Sofrim, with the dinim of writing Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs, and then supplements all Gemara over here. It also has a lot about the dinim of Kriyas HaTorah and other related matters. Anyway, so the Braisa there says, a kosev sefer Torah, person's writing a sefer Torah, bolo ligmer, if he's about to finish it, lo yigmer be'emsa daf, kederach shegomer b'chumashin, he should not end in the middle of a page, in the middle of a column, like you would by the other chumashin. Now you look at, for example, you look at a present-day sefer Torah, you'll find, for example, Chumash Bereishis ends in the middle of a column, and most sefer Torah nowadays are written according to one of two standards. And in one of them, at least, a very common, very widespread one, is Bereishis ends, there's one line of Sefer Bereishis at the top of a column, and then you have, there has to be, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, four blank lines between one Chumash and another, and then you have Shmos begins after those four blank lines, and similarly, Chumash Shmos ends in the middle of a column, and Vayikra begins after that, after the four blank lines, and so forth. Now, the Braisa is saying, when you come to the end of Devarim, don't do that. Don't finish in the middle of the column like you do by Ochamoshim. Elam katz of a holach ad sofa daf. Rather, you should make the lines shorter and shorter until you get to the end of the column. Rashi has a diagram over here showing literally that you make the lines shorter and shorter. So in other words, you figure out how much do you have left to write, and you make it like an upside down pyramid kind of. So that's how Rashi learns. The Rambam also mentions this din, but doesn't specify. No sekelim on the Rambam, and Poskim talk about different possibilities of what makatz of a holach mean. It can mean you write exceptionally short lines, but you're more than a student say the lines in a Sefer Torah are supposed to be a certain width. But here, when it comes to the end, and you have to get to the end. If you didn't plan it out right, and you're going to have a long way to go, then you make the lines very, very short. Another possibility is you write extra large letters. Whatever the case, the point is that the Braisa is saying you're supposed to end at the end of the column. So that contradicts Rav, who said that you can end even in the middle of the column. The answer is it's not necessarily a contradiction. Because Rav is not necessarily talking about, when he says boldigmer, he doesn't mean that he's finishing the whole Torah. He means that he's finishing an individual chumash. And fine, an individual chumash can be in the middle of a column. So he must have all Sefer Torah comma. What do you mean? Rav said the words if he is writing a Sefer Torah. So Rav says if you're writing a Sefer Torah, it's fine, but Chumashim shall Sefer Torah. What Rav means is when you're writing the individual Chumashim in a Sefer Torah, each one of them you can end in the middle of a column. Okay. The Gemara says, "Amy, still is that so? Is that what Rav means?" And so this is also in the name of Rav. That the words "la'enei koristua," which are the last words of the Torah, are to be in the middle of the page, in the middle of the column. The answer is that's not what it doesn't mean. The middle of the column, as in, let's say, the column is 42 lines, as our standard Sefer Torah usually have them nowadays. That it means you can finish on line 20 or 30 or whatever. It means the emsa shita. It means the words La'enei Kol Yisrael have to be in the middle of the last line. So you do have to get to the last line, but then you don't complete the line. You don't write La'enei Kol Yisrael until the end of the line. You write those words in the middle of the line. So the Gemara says Itzmar. In fact, there's a machlokas about that. Rabbanan Amri after Emtsa Shita. The Rabbanan hold that the words La'enei Kol Yisrael can be even in the middle of the line or even in the middle of the page. Rav Ashi Omer be'emtsa shita dafka, but Rav Ashi says it means it specifically has to be on the last line, but in the middle of the line. The last line should be incomplete, but it has to be the last line. And in fact, the hilchsa be'emtsa shita dafka, in fact, the halacha is like Rav Ashi, that it has to be dafka on the last line and in the middle of the line. So yes, so now the halacha is, as we said before, that if the sofer didn't plan it correctly, and he doesn't have enough text of the Torah to fill up that entire page writing a regular sized column, then he'll write it shorter than necessary. The poskim generally don't take up Rashi's opinion that it means that he would write it like an upside down pyramid. Rather, they say he would write extra short lines or extra larger letters if necessary, and do it that way. Nowadays, again, most Sefer Torah are done using one of two standard tikkunim, so they've already figured out the layout and they have it that now you're able to write it and be able to get to the bottom of the page and to the middle of the line without having to finagle anything like that. This that we're saying, it has to be at the end of the page and at the end, but in the middle of the line. I didn't really see anybody who talks about the symbolism of it, but maybe the symbolism of it is the Torah itself is complete. So we can't finish in the middle of a page as if to suggest that there's something more that needs to be added to the Torah. On the other hand, we have Torah Sheval Peh, and we have to put our own brains into it, and that would be symbolized by, you have that half a line left, showing, in other words, that there's room for us to be Mechadish in Torah, but only half a line. Basically, the Torah without our contributions is still a complete page. So maybe something like that, I don't know. In any case, that's how it is. It also, this way, for example, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, it is possible, according to some opinions, and this is halacha, it's possible to have one big scroll that contains the entire Tanakh in it. So if you were going to do that, then you would have the Devarim would end at the bottom of one column, and Yeshua would begin at the top of the next one. You have to have a break between them. Therefore, for that reason alone, you would also have to have that break at the end of the Torah. More dinim about the end of the Torah. Now, to hear talking not so much about the dinim of writing it, although there's going to come a din of writing it out of it, but rather something about the end, about the psukim, something special about the psukim at the end of the Torah. Amr of Yeshua Ba'aba, Amr of Gidol Amr Rab, Shmoina Psukim Shabbat Torah, the last eight psukim in the Torah, from Vayomas Shom Moshe, from where it says Moshe passed away, Yochid Kora Osim Bevesak Nessus, a Yochid reads them in Shul. Now, there's an enormous number of explanations among Rishonim what those words Yochid Kora Osem means. Rashi says that it means that you don't make an aliyah break in the middle of it. You have to have those eight psukim all have to be in one aliyah. Tosfos brings from Avinu Meshulam that it means that unlike most of the rest of the Torah, where you have the Baal Peri lanes and the Ola lanes along quietly with him, here you don't do that. Here you have to have that the Ola reading it himself. If he doesn't know how to lane it, then you better make sure to begin with that the Oyla, according to Rabbeinu Meshulam, is somebody who does know how to lane it. But there's a lot of other explanations. The Rimi Gash brings two possibilities. One is he says that it means you can't have these eight psukim as an aliyah by itself. You have to have it joined together with psukim before it. And the other explanation, he says, maybe it means the other way around. Maybe it means Dafka, these eight should be an aliyah by themselves. The point is, the Gemara is going to bring, according to one opinion, that Yeshua wrote these psukim. So then, two ways of looking at it are, either we want to show that these psukim are kind of distinct from the rest of the Torah, which was written by Moshe, and these were written by Yeshua. That would be a reason to make them an aliyah of its own Dafka and not have psukim before it with it. Or the other way of looking at it is, the other way that Rimi Gash looks at it is, we want to show those psukim are no less part of the Torah, despite the fact that Yeshua wrote them, and therefore we don't want to have them as part of an aliyah with the psukim before them. In practice, we kind of follow all these opinions. We never have it as an aliyah by itself. We always have. So we lay it on Simchas Torah after all. So in Chutzlar, Simchas Torah is always on a weekday. So we have five aliyahs plus Chosin Torah. And the Chosin Torah becomes from Ma'ona Elokei Kedem, which is quite a few psukim before this. Meanwhile, in Eretz Yisrael, where Simchas Torah sometimes can Shmini Atzeres / Simchas Torah can be on Shabbos, so they have to have seven aliyahs, so they begin from Vayal Moshe, which is also a few psukim earlier. The Rambam brings an explanation that Yochid Kora Osam means that you can lane them even if you don't have a minion in Shul. And then there's an explanation that somebody shown him say that Yochid means a Tamad Chacham, means that you should call up a Tamad Chacham Dafka to lane these psukim. This we also do. Chosin Torah is usually given to a Tamad Chacham. So there's a variety of different explanations. So the Gemara says, Keman, now which opinion of Tanoim does this follow? Deloy Kedab Shimon. It seems to be not like Kedab Shimon, because we're going to discuss now who wrote these eight psukim. Yitanya, we learn in a Braisa, when it says, Vayomos Shom Moshe Eved Hashem, Moshe, the servant of Hashem, passed away there. How could he be writing that? Efshem Moshe Chai. How could it be? Moshe himself is alive. Chosav Ayamos Shem Moshe, and he's writing the words that Moshe died. Or different views.
Maybe he's talking about a different Moshe.
No, he's not talking about a different Moshe, but hold that thought a second. But the Gemara in Bava Basra also brings this point, and it actually has a different gears over there. Efshem Moshe Mess, how could it be that Moshe himself has passed away and is writing the words Vayomos Shem Moshe? So who wrote these psukim is the question. Ella Abkan Kosav Moshe Mikan Ve'ela Kosav Yeshua Ben Nun Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, up until this point, Moshe wrote at Hashem's dictation. These last eight psukim Yeshua Ben Nun wrote. So says Rabbi Yehuda. The Amri Lord of Nechemia, or some say Rabbi Nechemia says that. By the way, the Evan Ezra on the Psukim says it's not really the last 8 Psukim. The Evan Ezra over there says it would have to be the last 12 Psukim, which is the 12th to last Pasuk, the beginning of Perek Lamed Dalet, begins by Yal Moshe Me'avos Moyav, Har Nevoah, that Moshe went up to Har Nevoah. And after that, he passed away there and was buried over there. How would he have the chance to transmit those last few Psukim there, even to the Jewish people?
In between, like, either while he's going up or while he's already on top, he dies.
No, because the Pesukim goes on to say what Hashem showed him from up there. By Yareyu Hashem es Kalaretz, Hashem showed him the entire. So therefore, he's already up there, and nobody's there with him. So the Evan Ezra learns that when it really wouldn't be the last 8 Pesukim, it would be the last 12 Pesukim. And Gemara apparently is not so bothered by that. But yeah. Okay, so what happened with, so again, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that Yeshua ben Nun wrote those last 8 Pesukim. Or Rabbi Nechemia says this. Omer Rabbi Shimon, so Rabbi Shimon says to Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Nechemia, what do you mean? How could the Sefer Torah possibly be missing one letter at the end of Moshe's life? When the Pasuk says, Hashem tells Moshe, take this Sefer Torah, the Samta Moshe, and place it next to the Oren, or inside the Oren, different opinions in Bava Basra. So it has to be at that point a complete Sefer Torah. And that was something that Moshe had to do while he's alive. Now, fine, the Mephoshim explained Rabbi Yehuda or Nechemiah is not so bothered by that, because it means when the Sefer Torah is complete, it will be placed into or next to the Oren. But still, Rabbi Shimon doesn't like that explanation. Ella, so Rabbi Shimon explains as follows. Ad kan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer U'Moshe Koisev Omer. Up until this point, Hashem would be dictating the words of the Torah, and Moshe would say it, would write it and say it. Or it's really supposed to be Omer V'Koisev. Moshe would say the words and write them. Now, Tosfos discusses over there here that it's not that different Gusoris over here. The word Omer is not found in all manuscripts and prints of the Gemara, and it may mean that Moshe was not actually saying the words, but rather just writing them. Tosfos discusses that there's a Chumrah that, based on this Gemara, that Sofim should do that when they're writing Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs, to say each word before they write it. So the Posekim talk about it may not be absolutely necessary la'halacha, but nevertheless, it's still, if nothing else, it's a good idea, and there are Posekim who learn that if you don't do it, if nothing else, it's not mitzvah and amulcha, it's not really the best quality of writing to not say the word beforehand. I saw a practical thing they pointed out to Sofrim. Sometimes what Sofrim do is fine, they want to write quickly, they don't want to interrupt between writing one word and the next. So what they'll do is they'll say a few words and then write them one after the other. But they point out that sometimes is more prone to cause them to make mistakes. They point out that, for example, they've done computer checking or hand checking, I don't know, of Sefer Torah, and they found, for example, where a Sofer wrote Padan Aram, where instead he said the words together and then mistakenly wrote Padam Haram. Why? Because in his mind, he has the last letter as a mem, and therefore he applies that to the first word as well. So it's a practical matter, therefore it's better for him to say each word individually, and that avoids those kinds of mistakes. Anyway. So up until this point, this is how it is. Hashem is dictating and Moshe is writing.
A copy from another Sefer Torah,
but it's still possible to make mistakes. So, yeah. They copy from Tikkun Kurim. Yeah, but it's still possible to make. So up until this point, Hashem is dictating and Moshe is writing. Or according to the Gilsa of Oyim of Akosev, then Moshe is saying each word and then writing it. Mikan Va'ela, from this point on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer, Hashem is saying each word, or Moshe Kosev B'Dema. And Moshe is writing with Dema. Now, there's quite a few explanations what Dema means. The simple meaning of Dema means tears. So it can mean that Moshe is writing the words with tears, as in he's crying while he's saying it. And in that case, then, with an interesting explanation, since that Misa doesn't always mean physical death. Sometimes the word Vayomos can mean a person descending from the level he was before. So therefore, according to that, so one way of looking at it is if Moshe is crying, then that means already it's like a miniature Misa, and therefore there's an explanation, I think, from the Sam Sofer that says that in that case, then he can actually be said to be Vayomos Shom Moshe in that sense, because he's crying while he's writing it. On the other hand,
it's one of the four things that, like, a person's considered dead.
A person is considered dead, right, but crying is not one of them, but nevertheless, in other words, it would be, the Rebbe talks about in a Sicha as well, actually, that even though the Torah makes it clear that Moshe was going to pass away, there's Rashi and Pashas Hazinu that implies that the Jewish people could have prevented it with their tefillas. So, or at least they should have tried to, and the vote would be, then it would still say that Yomos Shem Moshe, but it would be, in other words, he didn't physically die. It would mean that he died in a metaphorical sense, in the sense that he's now descended from his level that he was before. So here, in a similar vein, there are the Mephoshim who learn that Bedema means that Moshe literally wrote it with tears. And then in that case, he's writing with tiyu, it's not with ink. And therefore it's not considered such a falsehood for him to write by Yom HaShem Moshe, even though he's not dead yet. There's an interesting explanation within that as well, that maybe the tears are actually kind of like invisible ink. That's writing it in such a way that it only appears after he passes away. And then there's an explanation from the Vilna Gaon that says the word Dema means mixed up. So it means, in other words, we know the Torah is actually composed of names of Hashem. The whole Kol HaTorah is Shmos of Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chazal tell us. But what it is the letters of the Torah, the letters of these names of Hashem, are assembled into the words of the Torah that make up the stories and dinim and everything of the Torah. So now what it would be is Moshe was writing them in the jumbled order that they were originally, representing names of Hashem and not representing the actual words, Vayom HaShem Moshe, and then afterwards it was assembled into the order that we know it. And then there on the Foshim will point out that, again, if we have the Girsa before, that Moshe was saying each word before he's writing it, now he's not saying the words, he's just writing them and crying, then therefore that's also not considered such a falsehood that he's writing, even though it hasn't happened yet, because he's not actually saying the words with his mouth. In any case, Rav Shimon says that that's how it was. And we find this kind of thing, as far as taking dictation and writing, when it comes to Megillas Eicha, the Pesukim describe in Sefer Yirmiyah how Yirmiyah dictated it to Baruch, and Baruch went and read it to the ministers and all, and so you have it there. So they ask Baruch, how did you write it? By Yirmiyahem Baruch, and Baruch tells him, Piv Yikra Eila Es Kol Advarim Eila, with Yirmiyah with his own mouth read to me all these words, dictated to me these words, Vani Kosev Ala Sefer Bavyoi, and I'm writing it on parchment with ink. So we see, in other words, that one point of the proof is following the opinion that the difference is that up until now Moshe is saying the words before he's writing them, and now he's not saying them. Why? In the same way, Baruch does not say, "And I'm saying them and writing them." Why? Because they're kinnis, they're sad things, and therefore Baruch doesn't want to say the words before he's writing them. But we see that ordinarily, you do say before you write, and only Moshe was not doing it. Similar to the way by the Tosafot we do it in a lower voice, yeah. So in any case, the point is that now that we're saying, so in other words, in short, Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Nechemya holds that these eight psukim have a different writer than the rest of the Torah. The rest of it was written by Moshe, and these eight psukim by Yeshua. But Rabbi Shimon is saying that not, these eight psukim were written by Moshe as well. Now when we have Rav's din, that the eight psukim of the Torah, Yochid Kora Osam, that a Yochid reads them according to all the various explanations we said before of what that means, Lema Deloka Rabbi Shimon, would we have to say that Rav's din is not according to Rabbi Shimon? Because according to Rabbi Shimon, why should these eight psukim be any different than any others? And the Gemara says, no, after the Tamer of Shimon, you could even say it goes according to Reb Shimon, however, Ishtini Ishtini, even he agrees that there's a difference between them and the other Psukim. So since they're different in that Moshe wrote them with tears or in tears or didn't say them before, whatever, all the different explanations, then it should be different also as far as laning it in shul, and it should have different dinim as far as Yochid Kodosim. So it can work according to Reb Shimon as well. Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting side point over here. Shabbos Mincha, we say Tzidkosfa. Now, why is that? So it brings in Tosfos brings from Rabbi Sar Sholem Goin that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away at that time. Therefore, also, so we say Tziduk Adin, we say Tzidkoscha, acknowledgement that Hashem is always just and righteous, even though he took away from us a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. The Zohar also says that Yosef and David passed away at that time, and Mincha time of Shabbos as well. In any case, and therefore also, he goes on to say that therefore people don't sit and learn Torah at that time because al derech like the din, that when a Talmud Chacham passes away, then they close down the Bate Medrash so people will mourn for him. However, Tosfos points out that it doesn't seem to work because we know that Moshe wrote, we know that Moshe is there are words in the Torah that are on the day that Moshe passed away. Ben Meyav Esrim Shana Anochi Hayom, he says, I'm 120 years old today, and we find that he was writing that in the Torah. So how could he be writing it on Shabbos? So therefore, so Tosfos and Tosfos brings some other things, some other reasons to say that it was Erev Shabbos. So in fact, there is quite a lot of discussion about that. Did Moshe pass away on Shabbos or on Erev Shabbos? So there are an enormous number of explanations. Yesh Omrim, that in fact it was on Erev Shabbos, and what means the Bach, for example, discusses on the tour, what it means is Moshe passed away on Erev Shabbos, but he was buried on Friday night. So they buried him on Shabbos, and therefore, in token of that, on Shabbos by Mincha time, then we have a commemoration of Moshe passing away. Another possibility, Hashem also keeps Shabbos, but nevertheless, when you have a mess mitzvah, then you bury him. So it could also be, for example, let's say it was a time Bein HaShemoshes. It may have been, for example, during the time when, for us, we have to keep Shabbos ready because we're not sure whether at what precise moment Shabbos begins, but Hashem can still be doing Melacha then, just like we find by Sheshes Megadeshes. Good point, though. The Taz brings a point that, oh, listen, Moshe passed away on Erev Shabbos, period, but it was Mincha time, and therefore Shabbos Mincha, we make a commemoration of it even though that's not the day of the week. Then there are Mephoshim, there's interesting ideas that it talks about that the sun stood still and therefore it really was Shabbos because enough time had passed for it to be Shabbos, but the sun is still in the sky and therefore it's still Friday. Or they talk about something called Hashbos HaKomos that Moshe actually wrote the Sifrei Torah by using names of Hashem to make the pen move by itself rather than him having to write it by hand. And there's quite a lot of interesting ideas that are brought in different Sforim on this subject. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Since we mentioned one din that from this chain of Amiroyim, so the Gemara brings another one also related to Sefer Torah. Alekeach Sefer Torah min Ashuk. A person buys a Sefer Torah from the market to choytech mitzvah min Ashuk. Then it's like he's grabbing a mitzvah from the marketplace. Meaning Rashi says he accomplished a mitzvah, but it would have been a greater mitzvah if he had written it himself. Different Mephoshim, different Rishonim have different explanations of it, and some of them say that it means that it is considered a full-fledged mitzvah.
Does
not everybody have the ability to write a Sefer Torah themselves, yeah. Yeah. Kosovo, if he himself writes the Sefer Torah, or if he hires a sofer to do it, which is the same thing, Malol of Akosov, Kila Kibla Mehar Sinai, then Hashem considers it, and then the Apostle considers it, as though he personally received the Torah from Sinai. Which, in other words, therefore, so Rabbeinu Yohanan explains, because then the Midas HaRachmim can say on him to Hashem, can talk in his favor to Hashem, listen, this person went to all this trouble to write a Sefer Torah himself, or to commission it himself, so then he would have been willing to, had he been in the time of Matan Torah, he would have been willing to travel in the desert all the way to Har Sinai in order to receive the Torah. And Rav Sheshes says, "In higiyah afilo ois achas." What happens if he has a Sefer Torah that he got a hold of from somebody else, but then there was a mistake in it, and he repaired even one letter? And again, without that letter, without that one repaired letter, the Sefer Torah would be puzzled. Mala olav kilo kosvay. Then it can be considered as if he actually wrote it. So in other words, Tosfos teaches out. So he bought a Sefer Torah. He's not yet. In fact, so now, when he bought it and it was intact, then we said he's choytef mitzvah. It's like he's grabbing a mitzvah. One point being, it was not mitzvah and a mocher. One point is, it was because what has he accomplished before the other person had a Sefer Torah? And now he has a Sefer Torah. So it's like there's nothing been added in the world because of it. But if the other person had the Sefer Torah with a mistake in it, and it's also to have a Sefer Torah like that in your possession, and now this other person goes and buys it and repairs it, now he's accomplished something. Now he's accomplished something in the world, and therefore it can be considered as though he wrote it. This that was saying, one letter is the basis for that I've talked about, having a letter in the Sefer Torah. Every letter is essential for the Sefer Torah. Therefore, when you contribute your dollar or whatever it is towards a letter in the Sefer Torah, then you've made it, and then it can be considered as though you wrote the whole thing. Incidentally, by the way, the posts can talk about, if you have a mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, the Rosh in particular holds that mitzvah doesn't really apply so much nowadays, because we don't learn from Sefer Torah in the times of the Gemara. They learned directly from Sefer Torah, so therefore writing a Sefer Torah was enabling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, as opposed to, he says, nowadays the mitzvah would be to buy or to write other Sfarim, because that's what we learn from. There's a sicha that ever talks about the Chilach of Zalad, the ins and outs of it, and what exactly are the parameters of the mitzvah nowadays, and the fact is we don't, until the Rebbe's campaign for a letter in the Sefer Torah, people weren't always writing their own Sefer Torah. How come not? So the Rebbe discusses, because after all, the Tzibur has a Sefer Torah, and it belongs to the Tzibur as a whole, and therefore it can be considered written on behalf of each person in the Tzibur, but nevertheless, there's still the point of having your own personal letter in the Sefer Torah. The Gemara continues, Simon Saglam, a simon for the next few things, for the next few dinim that we're having in the Gemara. There is the word Saglam, or Aglam, it says on the side. These are initials for the following few statements. Ayin for Oysen, Gimel for Gilian, Lamed for Loy, and Mem for Nizamna. Tanarabanan. So now we're going to have some dinim about the writing of a Sefer Torah. Tanarabanan. Oysa adim yiriyam ibas sholosh dapin babas shmona dapin. You're allowed to make the sheets of parchment of which a Sefer Torah is made of. The sheet can have anywhere from 3 to 8 columns in it. Pachas v'kan v'yaser akan layaser. Don't make the sheets shorter than that or longer than that. Shorter than that, Rashi points out, then you're going to have the seams between one and the other are going to be too close or too far apart. So you want to have it. Say the turtle looks nicer when the seams are at a certain distance from one another. So don't make more or less columns on a sheet than that. Also, don't make the individual columns too short that you're going to have. In other words, you're going to say, I have a short sheet of parchment. I'm going to squeeze in more columns there and make them narrower. Don't do that, Meshnida Igeres, because then it appears like a letter. In a letter, people would commonly write short lines. You're gonna write wider lines and make key columns in the sheet. Don't do that, because it'll cause your eyes to wander. You're gonna lose your place as you go from one line to the other if the lines are too long. The proper width for the columns of a Sefer Torah is that you should be able to write the word L'mishpachaseichem three times. So it comes out as 30 letters plus the space between them. Sefrim commonly nowadays measure the widths of letters using yud widths, because a yud, they use the yud as like the unit of size for letters. And it comes out that if you calculate the number of yud widths in the word L'mishpachaseichem and the spaces between them, it comes out 62. So that should be the width of the columns of a Sefer Torah. Tosfos points out that if the writing is exceptionally large, then you can make wider columns like that, because then your eyes won't wander. But I think the halacha is not accepted like that. No matter what, it has to be no more than L'mishpachaseichem three times. Next, Nizdamna lo yudriya bas teisha dafim. Suppose that you happen to have a sheet of parchment that's big enough to write nine columns. So you have to divide it in two, because we said the maximum is eight. Lo yachlokos sholosh v'kan v'sheish v'kan. Don't divide it so that you have three sheets in one, so you have three columns in one sheet and six in the other. Ela arba l'kan v'chomesh l'kan. Divide it into four and five respectively, and that way the sheets will be at least closer, and will be as close as possible in size. You don't want to have that one sheet should be too much larger than the other. Okay. The Braisa continues, Bamed Burma Mum, when is all this talking about? The Tchilas HaSefer. This is all in the beginning or the middle of the Sefer Torah. Then you have these rules of how wide the columns should be and how large the sheets should be. After the Sefer HaSefer, but when it comes to the end of the Sefer Torah, after the Pasuk Echad, then even if you only have one Pasuk, after the Daf Echad, or even if you only have one column to make an entire sheet, then you do that. So I'm going to ask, what do you mean? Afilu posik echad sakudadach. What do you mean? If you have only one posik left, then we said before, you have to complete the Torah at the bottom of the column. So how are you going to write? Only one. How are you going to write? Only one posik in that last column. Ella, what it means is peema posik. That's what it means. Ella posik echad bedaf echad. It means if all you have left is one posik, then you write that one posik in that one narrow column. So you're going to write. You're going to make an extremely narrow column on the page. Rashi points out you may have only one letter on each line, but you're going to do that in order to fill up the column and in order to get to the bottom. Tosfos points out that actually what you could do is you could also make, in that case, you would also make the letters extra large so that you'll complete it at the bottom of the column. Okay, again, nowadays Sifrei Torah are written according to standards that you find in Tikkuni Sofrim, and therefore they don't really have those problems. It's planned well in advance, and they're able to complete the Torah on the last column in the middle of the line without having to stretch things out any further. Okay. Next, let's talk about the dinim of the margins of the Sefer Torah. The size of the margins on a Sefer Torah, l'mata tefach, on the bottom, so that at the bottom of the column, you have to have a tefach, four etzvos. Milamayla, gimel etzvos, on the top, you need three etzvos. The reason is, Rabbeinu Yohanan points out that you don't handle the top of the Torah as much as you do the bottom, so therefore, in other words, the point is, you need enough of a margin that you're going to hold on to the edge of the Torah and not smudge the letters, so on bottom, you need more because you're going to be holding it than on the top. Mind you, I mean, we're really not supposed to touch a sacred Torah with bare hands anyway, but fine, even if you're holding it with a talus or whatever, you still need more room on the bottom than on the top. Between one column and the next, you need two finger widths, two thumb widths. So that's when you're writing a sacred Torah, those are the minimum amounts. The post can point out, by the way, so now you have, when it comes to the end of one sheet and the beginning of the next, you have to make sure to leave at the end of each sheet more than one espa, because then you're going to sew it, and that means part of it is going to be sticking out in the back. You want to have that after it's sewn, you still have that space of two espas between one column and the next. Over chumashim. Now, if you're writing individual chumashim, which they would also write in those days on parchment scrolls, but they wouldn't use them to lay in the shul, they would just use them to learn from. So then you have smaller amounts. Since they don't have the kedusha of the sefer Torah, milamata sholosh etzbois. So at the bottom you need three etzbois for the margin, milamayla shtei etzbois. On the top you need only two etzbois. Well, then dafkim lo revach roichav gudol, and between one column and the next you need only one single width. Next, continues the braza. Oben shita l'shita, between each line, there should be the height of a line. The point of it is, in particular, we know in the alphabet, you have letters that ascend and that descend. You have the letter, you have the top of a line that sticks up above the line, the bottom of a line that falls from line, and then a couple of other letters sticks down below the line. So you need that space between lines so they don't bump into each other. Between each word and the next, there should be the size of a small letter, a yud. You don't want them too close together, because then two words will look like one. You don't want them too far apart either. And between one letter and the next and the word, there should be a hair's breadth. Again, you can't have the letters touching like we learned yesterday, but you also don't want too much space between them, because then they'll look like two words. Now, the Braisa continues. Al yamayt odem asaksav. Now, suppose though that, for example, let's say, for example, a person did not measure things correctly, and now he doesn't have enough room to write the sefer Torah properly, unless he's going to either make smaller margins or smaller spaces, or he's going to crowd the letters. So the Braisa says he should not crowd the letters. Al yamayt odem asaksav. A person should not crowd the letters together. Not in order to accommodate the bottom or the top margin. So in other words, let's say, for example, a person has planned out, to give an example, the Gemara tells us about the Basra that the ideal height of a Sefer Torah is 6 tefachim. The Rambam describes, and Hilchas Sefer Torah describes in some detail a Sefer Torah that he wrote, and the formulas for how to calculate the size of it and the margins and everything to make it that it should be the right size and the right dimensions. So let's say you start with a sheet of parchment that's six tefachim long, which is 24 etzbois. Since we're saying you need 3 etzbois on top and 4 on the bottom, then it means you have 17 etzbois available in the middle for the right. So now, let's say, for example, you happen to have a sheet of parchment that is only 23 etzbois tall. So you're going to say to yourself, well, I still want to be able to write 17, I still want to be able to write as much text as you would be able to have in 17 etzbois in a normal size sefer Torah. So therefore, so I'm going to make the letters on the top line smaller so I can squeeze more of them in, or the same thing on the bottom, and that way I'll still have the 4 tefachim on bottom, the 4 etzbois on bottom, and the 3 on top. The Braisa is saying, don't do that. Better you should write normal size letters, even if it means that you're going to have slightly shorter margins on the top or the bottom. So similarly, not in order to accommodate the space between one line and the next. If you have to, make lesser space there and make sure that the ascenders and descenders don't bump into each other, but don't make the writing smaller to begin with for that purpose. And also not in order to accommodate the spaces between one parasha and the next, the parashas Pesuchos and Stumos. In other words, plan it ahead, for example, that you're not going to have to squeeze, you're not going to have to crowd in the letters on a line in order to have room for a parasha Pesuchos or Stumos. The point is, in other words, it won't look nice. A sefer Torah is supposed to look beautiful, Zekei Livan Behu, and to do like that does not make it look beautiful. Yeah, by the way, there's a big machlokas between the Rambam and the Rosh about the proper layout of a psucha versus stuma. There's only one way which is accepted by both of them as a psucha, and one way which is accepted as both of them by a stuma, and our present-day Sifrei Torahs are written in that way to accommodate that. There's a machlokas between them about certain other layouts, and sometimes you can find older Sifrei Torah that are still in use where they weren't able to plan it out as well. They didn't have standard tikkunim to write from, and sometimes you have psuchas and stumas written that way, ending on one line and beginning on the next, for example. Okay. The Braita continues, Mizdam lo teva bas chomish osius. Suppose now a person has a word of five letters to write, and he's at the end of the line. Lo yichtav shtayim b'sechadach v'sholosh chutzadach. He should not write two of the letters of it on that line, within the margin, and then three of them are going to be sticking out into the margin. What he can do is, if there's enough room, then he can write three of the letters of the word in the margin, and two of them will be sticking out of the margin. And if, for example, in the case where there's only room to write two letters within the margin, then what he'll have to do is leave that space blank and start on the next line. Nowadays, in Sifrei Torah, what they do often is they'll stretch out some of the letters to fill in that space. Machlokas, we've shown him what happens, for example, can you have a word that's exactly half in and half out? Or Gemara is mentioning a word of five letters, three and two, versus two and three. What happens with longer words? It was, first of all, with longer words. So let's say you have a six-letter word. Can you do three in and three out? What if you have a seven-letter word? Can you do four in and three out, etc.? So the Rosh holds that, no, the maximum you can write is two letters outside the margin. So therefore, if you have a word longer than that, then you can't, even though you have less than half of the word outside the margin, then you can't do that. But the Rambam holds that, no, the Rambam holds you could write even half the word outside the margin as long as half of it is inside. And the Rambam gives an example. If you have, let's say, a 10 or 11 letter word, you would be allowed to have as many as five letters sticking out into the margin. We have, there's one 10 letter word in the Torah of Mishare Sechem, and there's no 11 letter words in the Torah, but in Megillas Esther you have the words Vahash Darpanim. So then, according to the Rambam, you would be able to write as much as five letters of that outside the margin. Continues the Braisa, Nizdam leteva bas shtei osius. What happens if you happen to come up, you have at the end of the line, you have a word of two letters only. Now we just said two letters are allowed to be outside the margin. Does that mean you can write that whole two letter word there? No. Lawyers rekena levein adapin. Don't put it between the columns. Don't put it outside the margin. Start the next line with that two letter word. More dinim on writing a Sefer Torah. Tosfos points out in this connection, by the way, the name of Hashem does have to be completely within the margin. Even though we're saying there's leniencies to write a certain number of letters outside the margin, when it comes to the name of Hashem, don't do that. Tosfos can talk about, let's say, for example, by mistake you did that, one thing you could do is make all the other lines above it be equal to that in length, and then it's not outside the margin, then it's all justified, it's all lined up. Okay. Dinim about writing Hashem's name. Hatoya b'Hashem. Suppose a person is writing Hashem's name and makes a mistake. So let's say he forgot to write an entire name, for example. Goras mashakosav. Then he has to wait till the ink dries, scrape away what he wrote instead of Hashem's name. V'kosav as Hashem. V'tolas mashagora. Then what he'll do is, I'll take the word that he put there and put it on above, between the lines, hanging between the lines, because Hashem, I'm a koyma grav, and write Hashem's name on the scraped away area, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. So let's say, for example, Sofer is writing, and he comes across, let's say, for example, he's writing the pasuk by Daber Hashem Moshe Lamer. So he writes by Daber El Moshe, let's say, and he forgets the word Hashem. So then what we're saying is, he should scrape away the word El, and the words El Moshe, let's say, write the name Hashem over there and put the words El Moshe above the line between the line above it, so that it'll be clearly obvious that it was meant to go over there. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yossi am ach toilin as Hashem. Rabbi Yossi says you don't have to do that. You could instead suspend the name of Hashem. So you leave in our example, let's say, so you would leave the words El Moshe in place and you would write the word Hashem suspended between the lines. Rabbi Yitzchok says you can also erase the word that was supposed to be there instead of Hashem's name, and you write the name of Hashem on the erased spot. Now the difference is, erasing means when the ink is still wet. Scraping would mean to wait until it's dry and scrape it away. Now it looks much nicer when it looks much nicer and cleaner when it's on a scraped area than when it's on an erased area, and nevertheless Rabbi Yitzchok says that's fine. Tosfos discusses what does it mean. Does it mean So what's the order of precedence? It sounds like the Gemara is saying the best of all is to scrape and then write Hashem's name. The next best is to write on an erased place. And the worst of all would be to suspend it, the best of all would be to scrape. Next best would be to hang it between the lines. Worst of all would be to erase and then write Hashem's name on an erased spot. But then Tosfos discusses and says it's not so. And actually what it is is Rabbi Yitzchak is not referring to what Rabbi Yossi had said right before him. He's only referring to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you can scrape it. Rabbi Yitzchak is saying you can also erase it. But still hanging the name over there would be worst of all. Tosfos then goes on to say that Rabbi Yossi would say that hanging it there is the best thing, and you have the various possibilities. The post can also talk about if you forgot to write part of the name of Hashem, can you put that between the lines? I think the consensus is that you can't, but I don't remember for sure. That's actually the next thing in the Gemara over here. It's not a matter of poskim. It's the Gemara says it right here. Reb Shimon Shazuri and Mekol Hashem Kol Tolan Miksasa Ein Tolan. Reb Shimon Shazuri says you can suspend the entire name of Hashem between the lines if necessary, but not only part of the name. So if, let's say, you wrote Yud K and you forgot Vav K, then Reb Shimon Shazuri says you can't put the Vav K above the line. Reb Shimon Elazar says in the name of Reb Meir, the most machmir of all, in kosnes Hashem lo yamokam agrar v'lo yamokam amachak, you cannot write Hashem's name on a place that was scraped away or a place that was erased. The ain tolano, so you can't even suspend it between the lines. If you left out a name of Hashem, Ketzadosa, what would you have to do? Says Reb Shimon Elazar, Masalakas Ayudia Kulova Gonza, you would have to take away the entire sheet and put it in Gniza and start with a fresh sheet and write it properly. Different opinions about what you do in this kind of situation. If you left out a name of Hashem, the halacha is that you could be toiler, you could suspend Hashem's name between the lines if necessary. But you can put the entire name there. You can't put it between the lines. So the Gemara says, Itmar, Rav Hananel, Omer Rav, Halacha Tolan Es Hashem. The halacha is that you could suspend Hashem's name between the lines. Rav Babachana, Omer Rav Yitzchak, Bar Shmuel, Halacha Moichet Pekosim. And Rav Babachana says in the name of Rav Yitzchak, Bar Shmuel, that the halacha is that you could erase the area and write Hashem's name. Now, these are the same as the opinions, two of the opinions that we just said. Rav Yitzchak, the Tana had said that you could erase when the ink is still wet and write Hashem's name there. And Rav Shimon Shazuri said, Rabbi Yehuda had said, and Rabbi Shimon Shazuri had said, and also agreed that you can hang Hashem's name between the lines. So here the Amoraim, Rabbi Hananel bar Rav, Rabbi Hananel, the name of Rav, and Rav Abachanan, the name of Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel, are saying these respective opinions. So the Gemara says, V'leima halacha kamar, umar halacha kamar. So why didn't each one say? Why doesn't Rabbi Hananel say in the name of Rav, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Shazuri? And let Rav Abachanan say in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel that he holds the halacha is like, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yitzchak. And the reason is Mishum De'apchi Lahu, because there are some Tanoim who lived, there are some people who learned Brises and taught Brises who had the opinions switched around, so therefore you couldn't say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, because you wouldn't be clear which version of the Brisa you're using to say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore they have to say explicitly what they say the actual halacha is. The accepted halacha is that you could be toiler as Hashem, but that's it. You can't write it on a place that was scraped or erased, but you can put it between the lines if necessary. So the Gemara continues. Amar Ravin Bachinina, Amar Ola, Amar Rabchanina. Halacha Kedem Shimon Shazuri. The halacha is like Kedem Shimon Shazuri in this din. The loy oid, and not only that, ela kol makom shoshanah Kedem Shimon Shazuri. Any place where Kedem Shimon Shazuri says something in a Mishnah or a Braisa, halacha kamoisei, then the halacha is like him. So the Gemara says, Aheya, which din of Reb Shimon Shazuri is Ravin Bar Chinina saying this rule that the halacha is like Reb Shimon Shazuri? Ilema aha, was it on what we just learned, Reb Shimon Shazuri and Mekol Hashem Kol Tolan Miksasa Ein Tolan, that you can suspend the entire name of Hashem but not part of it and we'd be saying that the halacha is like him. The problem with that is, but we just had the discussion of Amiroyim on it. Where we had the two different opinions of Tanoim, whether you can suspend Hashem's name or whether you can write it on an erased part. The point is, if Rovin Bar Chinina was referring to this din and saying that any place Rav Shimon Chazuri says that says a din, the halacha is like him, then instead of the Gemara saying, instead of the Gemara presenting it as a whole new thing, Omar Rovin Bar Chinina, Omar Ola, Omar Rav Chanina, that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri, then it should have said that he also says, it should have said, after it mentioned Rav Hananel's opinion and Rav Abachana's opinion, it should have continued with a vav. And Rav Machinina says, in the name of Ula, in the name of Rav Hananel, the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri. So in other words, you have two Tanoim who pass them differently, and I'm telling you that I disagree, and I hold that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri. The fact that it presented as a whole new statement means he's not actually referring to this din. So we're going to go through now, the Gemara is going to go several, Rav Shimon Chazuri doesn't come up that often in Shas, so we're going to go through the various dinim that he says in Mishnayos and Braises and see which one of them was Rav Bar Chinina referring to when he said the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri. Again, by elimination, it can't mean the one we just said, because then the Gemara would have presented it as in continuation to the other two opinions. So Ela Achal, maybe he's referring to the following din. We have a concept called Ben Patur. We're going to learn about it in Sefer Kolin, Rest Hashem. You shecht an animal, you find in its womb a baby, then you're allowed to eat that baby without shechita, subject to certain conditions. So what happens if, what happens though if the baby, if after shechita, the baby came out and stood on its feet? So the Chachamim hold that it would require shechita, because at this point it's standing independently. People are going to think that it's not a ben pur. People are not going to realize that it was a ben pur, and they're going to think you're allowed to eat meat without shechting. But Rav Shimon Chazuri Yomer, afilu ben chomesh shanim v'chodesh basada, even if this ben pur, this baby that was found alive in the mother's womb after shechita, even if it's 5 years old and v'chodesh basada and plowing in the field, so it's a fully mature animal, shechitas imim etaharkei, nevertheless, the fact that its mother was shechted makes it tahor because it was still in the mother's womb when it was at the time of the shechita, and uber yerech ima, who the baby is considered a limb of the mother. So therefore, it doesn't need its own shechita. The fact that its mother was shechted years ago is enough to make that it's kosher to eat without shechita. So then you're going to say that Rav Bar Chinina is referring to that. The problem with that is, again, that Ze'iri says in the name of Rav Chanina that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri. But if Rav Bar Chinina also was referring to this, then it should say Ze'iri said in the name of Rav Chanina that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri, and also Rav Bar Chinina said in the name of Rav Chanina that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri. Again, the fact that it presents it as an independent statement means he's not referring to that din. Okay, Ela Aha. Maybe Rovin Bar Chinina was referring to the following din. A din in the Sefer Gittin. If a healthy person says to Edim, write a get for my wife, then that's not good enough. They can write the get, but it's not good enough for them to give her the get. Because maybe he just means they should write it, but we can't even write it. The fact that he said write and he didn't say give implies that he's just trying to make a joke over here or something. He's not actually serious about it. Otherwise, what good is a get written without being delivered? So therefore, it means maybe they don't have the shlichus to write the get at all. But if he says give it, then they can write it. Then he's appointed them as shluchim, and then they can write it and give it. Now, so what happens though, on the other hand, if the person is, for example, dangerously ill, then we don't say that. A person in those conditions is not going to play around, and therefore, even if he just says right, we assume he also meant it to give. Because after all, why would he be wanting to divorce his wife? In a case like that, would obviously be because he doesn't want her to have to go through chalitza or yibum. So therefore, even if he doesn't say tzlu, we evaluate that that's what he meant. So, but the Mishnah says, but in Gittin, v'rishonu ha'yo'imim, originally, the Chachamim used to say, Hayotze b'koiler, a person who's being taken out in chains, and a koiler is a chain around the neck where he's about to be executed. But Omar, and he says, Kis will get this, she write a get for my wife. Harele yuchte, will be yitnu, they can not only write the get, but they can deliver it, because again, we can assume that he meant to say that they should deliver it as well. And just, he's in a state of terror, and he didn't think of saying it. Later on, the Chachamim also decided that it should be not just a case where a person is about to be executed, also a person who is about to go on a sea voyage by Yotzei B'Shiyara, or a person who is going to go on a caravan trip across the desert. The same thing. They were maybe not in such a panic, but nevertheless, they were also busy with their upcoming trip, and therefore, and again, it's very likely there's definitely enough of a possibility that they may be lost at sea or lost in the desert. And their wife will remain in Aguna, and therefore we can also assume that when they said Kisvu, that they meant not just a right to get, but also to deliver it. Reb Shimon Shazuri says this is also true of somebody who is dangerously ill. So he's not about to go on a trip, and he's not about to be executed, but nevertheless, Reb Shimon Shazuri says they are also, if he says Kisvu, then it's good enough to deliver the get as well. So you're going to say again that Rav and Bar Chinina is referring to that. Maybe he was referring to that. Inami aha. Or maybe you could say that Rabban Machinah's din, that Rabban Machinah's statement is referring to the following din of Reb Shimon Shazuri. We know there's the concept of Dmai, you buy Peiros from Amah Oretz, then you have to take Maisa from them just in case. What happens if you bought them and now it's Shabbos and you can't take Maisa on Shabbos? So then the din is, the Mishnah tells us in the Sefer Dmai, you can ask the Amah Oretz whether he took Maisa, and that one Shabbos, you can rely on him, and you're allowed to eat the fruit on Shabbos. Motzei Shabbos, you're going to have to take Maisa. The Yerushalmi in Masechta Dmai talks about it, Tosfos brings over here, that the one idea behind it, the Gemara has the expression over there, that Amah Oretz are afraid to lie about such a thing. So there's discussion about that. One reason is not so much because they're afraid, but because of Kovet Shabbos. You should be able to eat this food on Shabbos, then the Chum gave you a special dispensation. Given that most Amah Oretz do take Maisa, then fine, we can give you a break. Then the Yerushalmi brings over there, Amos Shabbos al Amah Oretz. An Amah Oretz is afraid on Shabbos. Now, what does that mean? There's an explanation that it actually means. An Amah Oretz recognizes the Kedusha of Shabbos and is afraid to lie on such a holy day, which in that case, that tells us that what the caliber of the Amah Oretz was compared to us. Are we afraid of that kind of thing? No. So it tells us what the Amah Oretz in those days were, in a way, much greater than we are. But the other explanation, Tosfos says, is it means that they're afraid of the fact that they know at least the din that once Shabbos comes and you can't eat a snack from it anymore, you have to take Meister, and therefore they're afraid to be machshel you, and therefore they'll tell you the truth. So that Shabbos, therefore, you can rely on that, but after Shabbos, you're still going to have to take Meister following the regular rules of mine. So now the Mishnah says, here's another example where you can trust the Amoras. Trumas Meister shall demai shall cause you on the Mekoyma. Part of what you have to do with Dmai, you don't have to take Trum of Dola from it, because the Amir Oretz, when they checked out the situation, when Yerushalayim Kohen Gadol checked out the situation and found that most Amir Oretz were giving Truma and Meiser, but a significant minority were not, and that's when they came up with the whole concept of Dmai, so they found that all the Amir Oretz do separate Truma, because they know that eating Tevel without taking out Truma is Chayav Misa B'nei Shemayim, and they weren't gonna play games with that. But the rest of the Maestris, they were carelessly. So now, that also includes, therefore, when you take Maestrishin, that you have to take out of Maestrishin, you have to take out Trumas Maestr and give it to the Koyan, and it has the same dinim as Truma. So therefore, so when it comes to Dmai, we don't have to talk about Truma, but we do have to talk about Trumas Maestr. So what happens if you have Trumas Maestr was separated from Dmai, Shechozro of Koyma, and now it fell back in there, it got remixed in with the Peiros, and you don't have enough to be Mavatale. So now it's called Meduma. The rule would be such a thing. If Duma, the din is, then you would have to sell it to Koyanim and they would have to sell it to Koyanim and they would eat it as though the whole mixture was Truma. But it's a big loss. So now the question is, though, this is Dmai after all. Maybe to begin with, the Amoritz farmer did take all the Trumas and Meisers, and in that case, it wasn't necessary for you to take Trumas Meisers. So, what do we do? Reb Shimon Shazuri, says that even on weekdays, so the previous din was only on Shabbos, if you didn't take Maisu at all. Here, with the Trumas Maisu got mixed in, Reb Shimon Shazuri says, even on a weekday, Shoyla, you can ask the farmer, the Amah Oretz, did you take Maisus and Trumas Maisu from this produce, the Oikhoi Apiv? If the guy says that he did, then you can eat the produce based on his say-so, because then it means, in other words, your Trumas Maisu was not necessary to take in the first place, and therefore there's no Meduma of it. So therefore, so you're going to say, according to that, also, that when Rav and Bar Chinina said the halacha is like Reb Shimon Shazuri, then he's referring to that din. So either that or the din about the dead. Again, the problem with that is, well, it's not Allah, but it was said on that. Omer Rabbi Yechanan, halacha for Rabbi Shimon Shaduri, din mesukon over trumas ma'aser shodmai. That Rabbi Yechanan says the halacha is that Rabbi Shimon Shaduri in those two cases. The in Isa, and if you're going to tell me, again, that Rav and Bar Chinana is saying that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Shazuri. In one of those cases, Hunami Lema. Then again, the Gemara should have said, Amar Rav Yechanan, halacha Rav Shimon Shazuri. And so also, V'chein Amar Rav and Bar Chinana, that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Shazuri. Again, the fact that it presents them as two independent statements means that Rav and Bar Chinana is not referring to this statement, but rather to something else. Okay. So the Gemara tries another one. Ela Aha. Maybe the Rav Machinana was referring to the following statement of Rav Shimon Shazuri. Rav Yosef ben Kippur Omer, and Rav Shimon Shazuri. All Hamitri, Egyptian beings, they've been identified as, so Rashi identifies a French word, Fazula, which is a type of bean. I think it's fava beans or something like that. Whatever the case, they're a type of beans where sometimes now you have the Gemara mentions the Gemara describes in other places you might grow the plant for its seeds for the peas, or you might grow the plant in order to eat the greenery, in order to eat the leaves of it. So Rabbi Yosef ben Kippur Omer, Kula Mitzri, these Egyptian beans, these fava beans or whatever, Shazori Lazara. If you planted them planning to use the seeds, then the time, you have to know what year it belongs to. As far as the Dinim of Maisa, it's going to depend. If you planted it for the seeds, then it's considered, it's going to go according to the year when it took root in the ground. So let's say you planted these Kula Mitzri a short time before Rosh Hashanah of the second year of Shemitah, and now they're growing and you harvest them during the third year. If you planted them for the seeds, they're going to be considered second year produce, and therefore what you're going to take from them is Maaser Sheni. So here, Shazari Lazara, you planted it for the seeds, and therefore for the peas, and therefore the time, which year it's going to belong to, as far as Maisa, and as far as Shemitah, is going to go according to when it took root. Miksase Hishrish Lifnei Rosh Hashanah, Miksase Acha Rosh Hashanah. Now, of the cloth you planted, some of it took root before Rosh Hashanah, and some after. Ein Termin Mizal Zeh. You can't take Terumah from one part of the cloth on behalf of the other. Lafisha Ein Termin Ma'askrin, Lamina Chodesh Ala Yashin, Lamina Yashin Ala Chodesh. Because you can't take Ma'aser from one year's produce on behalf of another. So besides the point that you have, you don't know which year it belongs to as far as Ma'aser Sheni, there's also the point that even if both of them are Ma'aser Sheni years, let's say it's going from the first year to the second, nevertheless, produce that took root during the first year, you can't take Ma'aser from it on behalf of produce for the second year or vice versa. Kay said yes, so what should you do? Serve a gronel asotai. You pile the entire granary together. In other words, you take you mix the whole crop together well. And then that way, proportionally, the truma and meiser that you take out will be proportionally from each part according to how much it was. So you have, let's say, you have 100 bushels of this kula mitzri. And 60 of them took root before Rosh Hashanah, and 40 of them after. Fine, mix the whole 100 bushels together. When you take out, for example, you're taking out, for example, 2 bushels for Tshuva. Fine, of that 2 bushels, we can assume 60% of it is from the first year's crop, and 40% is from the second year's. And since the whole mixture is 60-40, then you're good. So in other words, Rabbi Shimon Shazuri holds of the concept called Yesh Bila. We can assume that it was thoroughly mixed. So now you're going to say that Rav Bar Chinana is referring to that din saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon Shazuri. Again, the problem is, Ha'itman Allah, it was said about that explicitly. Omer Rav Shmuel Manachmeni, Omer Rav Yechanan, halacha k'Rav Shimon Shazuri. The in Issa, and again, if that's what Rav Bar Chinana meant, Lema Namiya, Hu Nami Lema, then it should also say that Rav Shmuel Manachmeni said this, and so did Rav Bar Chinana. So evidently, again, Rav Bar Chinana's statement about Rav Shimon Shazuri and the halacha being like him is not referring to that din. So we'll continue tomorrow, that's the same, and the Gemara will bring a couple of other dinim that Rav Shimon Shazuri says and discuss that, then discuss which one of them Rav Bar Chinana was referring to, and we're going to spend a lot of time discussing various dinim that Rav Shimon Shazuri said, and then eventually we're going to get back to dinim of writing Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzos.
Why?